Mr. Cummins, can I ask you first of all about your personal involvement really in the birth of ASEAN? How did this all come about?
Well, as you know, we started with a smaller group called ASA, Association of Southeast Asia, composed of Malaysia, Philippines, and Thailand. And then the organization faced many difficulties, the problem of Sabah claims by the Philippines, and then confrontasi between Philippines and Indonesia on the one hand and Malaysia on the other hand. So the whole thing came to a standstill until the matter was patched up between Indonesia, Philippines on one side and Malaysia on the other side. They came to Bangkok, as you know, to discuss, to negotiate, and finally they came to a reconciliation. So immediately after an agreement was reached between Malaysia and the other two countries, I began to ask Indonesia to join in the group. Indonesia agreed, but asked for time, because they want to normalize the relations with Malaysia first. And after normalization, Indonesia joined in, and so did Singapore. So we became five instead of the original three. So that's how ASEAN started. And of course, the first contribution to be made by Indonesia, the newcomer into the regional organization, was to find a name. We discussed about the name, what name we should give to the new organization. Finally, Mr. Adam Malik found the name ASEAN, and we all agreed that it was a suitable name. So this is how ASEAN came into being. For this, they all went to Bangkok. We had a formal meeting in Bangkok, and then we moved to the seaside, a place called Bangsan. That's about 90 kilometers from Bangkok. And it was at Bangsan that all the negotiations were conducted. Between golf games and swimming parties and lunch and dinner parties. But fortunately, all the difficulties were smoothed out. All five fall into agreement to set up a regional organization to work on economic and other problems by joining together in fostering cooperation in the spirit, as the Bangkok Declaration said, in the spirit of equality and partnership.
Now, skipping forward to the present time, what do you think has come of this declaration? What has it achieved? What has ASEAN achieved?
Well, in terms of procedure, there have been a lot of meetings and paperwork and permanent committees set up. But I think the most important achievements were the desirability or the determination of all parties to work together. Of course, they are not willing to sacrifice their sovereignty or their freedom of choice. They still want to keep full discretion in deciding on any matter or in joining in any project. But as I said in my speech at the Financial Times conference, they have shown that they found some benefits in working together, especially when dealing with more powerful countries or groups, such as the common market, and in dealing with certain countries like the United States and Japan. By making joint démarches or by conducting joint negotiations on ASEAN side, say with the European Economic Community, they achieved something that was never known before in Southeast Asia. These results are modest, but rather encouraging.
It's perhaps true to say that in Europe too, people couldn't have envisaged something like the European Economic Community, even after the end of the Second World War. Is there any parallel, do you think, in development between ASEAN and the EEC? Can you see ASEAN going in a similar way or not?
I think it's too soon to predict the future, because ASEAN, compared with common market, is still in a very embryonic state or stage. We just started. It's like a baby, like an infant learning how to walk, while common market has reached a stage much further advanced. They are walking, and I suppose soon they are going to be running too, especially if the political unity and joint political agreements are reached between the members of the EEC. ASEAN is learning, is playing by the ears, you see. Of course, they look at the parable of success in the form of common market, but we are still a long way off. What can be achieved will depend on many things, on individual nations, on future events in this part of the world, on the policies of great powers like United States, Soviet Union, China, European powers, Japan, and some socialist powers like North Vietnam and North Korea. So it's very difficult to try to read into the crystal ball. For the moment, the crystal ball is quite hazy. But I think among the five, the common effort, the joint working will most likely continue and will develop in certain limited fields until such a time when everybody is convinced that by making sacrifices they will get greater benefits. Because after all, it's a question of national interest. Sacrifices must be promising enough in terms of future compensations and future advantages. Or otherwise, the sacrifices will not be consented, will not be accepted. And in this kind of regional cooperation organization, as in the case of common market, members must sacrifice something in order to get something else. So it is the spirit of give and take, of sacrifice, that is very important in the present and future success of any organization of regional cooperation. I think the Europeans have found that out. We have, to a certain extent, begun to find it out, but not enough in my opinion. And I think we have to learn more. And as I said at the end of my speech, I hope that both the leaders and the peoples will be wise enough to see that where their true interests lie.